From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Here's your immunity challenge. Guess who's sitting across the table from me right now in this very room? I'll give you a hint. He's the first person ever to win the Emmy for Best Reality Show Host. He's also the author of a new series of books starting with Volume 1 of Stranded. He's the director and writer of the movie Finders Free. Give up, put out your torches. It's Jeff Probst. Jeff, thanks for coming. Good to have you here.
Elvis, I have waited for this day. I listen every week. I've heard every interview you've done. You amaze me. You are the reigning film historian. And I'm blown away by how many times you'll have a filmmaker on and you'll say, you know, something I've noticed is that all your films deal with the father-daughter relationship. And then the filmmaker will go, I never thought about that. Matter of fact, I left my daughter just 3 weeks ago. You're right. You have this way of connecting dots that even the artist doesn't seem to understand.
Well, you certainly make the show sound a lot more interesting than it is. And I won't ask you any Jonathan Panner questions instead. Before we get to Stranded, actually, let's start with that.
Yes.
I guess this is to celebrate your 13th year of Survivor in a way.
Yes. Yeah, Stranded is Survivor for kids. And that the idea was taking a blended family, a mom and a dad get married, and they have a boy and a girl, and they want them to get to know each other. So they put them on a sailing trip with their favorite uncle, and there's a shipwreck, and the kids end up stranded with no adults. And that's the basic premise. So you have four kids aged, you know, nine to 13.
Yeah.
And what would you do? Because that's what I always ask kids when they say, I want to do Survivor for Kids. I say, well, what would you do? Do you think you could do it? You're 10 years old. Do you think you could make a shelter? Do you think you could make fire? Could you figure out how to catch fish if there really were no adults? And the response has been really surprising to me. I had no idea. You know, New York Times bestseller. It's sold out at Scholastic book fairs. I get tweets every day from moms, and it's been so rewarding because I love kids and I'm a dad now. And so there's a whole new connection to the show for me.
What I thought was kind of really cool about the book is that the kids are basically, we're introduced to them in terms of physical descriptions through Vanessa, her point of view. Mm-hmm. We get to hear who her brother is. We get to hear who Carter is. We get to hear who Jane is by her connection. And she, you established very early on, and she's kind of like the emotional center of this.
For now.
You don't want to give too much away.
No, but it's...
But there's a shift by the end of the book, though. There's already a little bit of a shift. Now, I'm trying to give stuff away, but...
Yes.
By the end of the first book.
The first book is kind of the setup.
That's all I've read is the first book.
And you're right. And one of the things, I'm writing it with Chris Tebbets, and one of the things he's teaching me is how to write for kids in a chapter format through points of view. So you shift points of view. And Vanessa right now is the oldest and therefore just de facto leader because she seems to make the most sense. But as they begin to get to know each other better and truly become brothers and sisters, then Mother Nature has more and more action and adversity for them. Their roles shift. And that little kid who was the couch potato, who all he's ever done is watch survival shows, turns out he actually learned something that can help. And his self-esteem starts to grow.
But I was just thinking back to Finders Fee, just that sense of pitting people against each other. I mean, for dramatic terms, I mean, because Finders Fee definitely does that. And we should say it's the movie you wrote and directed with a great cast, James Earl Jones and Ryan Reynolds and Dash Mihok and a really interesting group of actors in there. And it also ends up becoming this sort of thing, too, about these shifts of power and over a lost and found lottery ticket.
Yeah, Finders Fee was a really amazing experience for me. It happened. I got the green light, the money. That was like $1.2 million, which still seems like a lot when you think about somebody actually giving you that money, even though it's no money in terms of making a movie. But I got that news while we were sitting on the boat of the first season, day one of Survivor, getting ready to throw them overboard. One of our sort of PA types had came up and said, hey, you got an email. James Earl Jones said, yes, the movie's a go. And so that whole summer of shooting Survivor and then coming home and directing this movie with these actors was so fun. And that story was influenced by Survivor because it was about code. Who are you? How are you going to live your life? What are the decisions you're going to make? And it was one of the, up until making this last movie, Kiss Me, that was probably the highlight of my creative career because it's just you. That's what I love about making films on a small level is it's just your adventure. I would love to write and direct movies all the time, like a lot of people.
When I met you at that airport in Miami in the summer of 2001, you told me, you said, okay, here's what you should know about me. I'm a filmmaker. I'm a storyteller. This is who I am. Don't think about Survivor. I remember vividly you saying
that.
And,
you know, that shows my naivete because I didn't know anything about what Survivor was going to become. I've learned so much about storytelling from Survivor. Because what's great about Survivor is you are writing just in a different way. In a screenplay, you set up the box, here's the situation, and you dictate the actions the characters will take. On Survivor, you set up the box. The situation is an island. Here are the little rules you have. They decide what the actions will be, and then you write it when you're finished, and you create the suspense for the audience by what you don't show them.
Because I was going to say it, apropos of that, I couldn't think of any better sort of use of your interest in storytelling than ending up on Survivor.
Elvis, it changed my whole life. And Mark Burnett gave me a voice from the beginning. He never had me wear an IFB. He never gave me direction. He just said, we took a long walk on the beach the very first day I landed. And he talked for about 2 hours about what he envisioned the show was going to be. Big arcing stories, heroes and villains, good guys and bad guys, underdogs, surprising people, and heroes failing. And when it was over, he said, give it back to me. And I gave it back to him in 5 minutes or, you know, a sort of a digest. And he said, that's the show. Now just go do it. And that's how he's been with the entire crew. He's been very hands-on in terms of story, but he's taught us how to make this story. And he's now given it to us, which he said he would in the beginning. He said, I won't be here forever. I'm going to create other shows. So he taught us, and then he turned it over to us. And it's been like getting paid to go to 13 years of storytelling school.
Well, and 26 seasons of it. That's the thing that's crazy, that you end up basically doing two runs a year on the show.
Yeah.
Well, you got really emotional. I almost thought you were going to step down from the show.
Yeah, I know. It's been I think becoming a dad. I married my wife, Lisa, and she brought these two amazing kids into our life.
How old are your kids?
Now they're 9 and 7. And it changed, like, loved one visits that happen on Survivor. I used to be able to hold the tears back. Now when I see a father with a son or a daughter, I'm welling up. Now I have some understanding of what that connection is like.
You also have the same kind of investment now the audience has.
Yes, you're right.
You're not detached anymore. You're now an audience surrogate. You're now literally sitting in for us.
Yes.
And just watching this last season, watching that real shift in this last season, when you were really caught up, is this the new Survivor now where he's jettisoning the detachment and a different guy?
I don't know. I think it's interesting that you say that because I do think the show evolves for the players and for me. And in the very beginning, I was very concerned with capturing moments and making sure they had a button so that we could have a little moment, because I kind of look at reality shows as you need moments. If you have 3 or 4 great moments in an episode, every episode you'll be on forever. And then there was a point where I was getting a little bored with my role, and so I realized, okay, maybe if I talk less, I'll get better stuff, kind of like you're doing with me now. And so I started doing that, and I was amazed how powerful that pause.
Well, this is actually about, especially about the 6th season, where you became really withholding and you stopped smiling.
Huh. Yeah. Well, there's a psychological game going on, and it starts in casting. When I'm trying to size up, who are you if you're going to be on the show, and what is your role going to be? Are you going to be a leader, a follower? Are you going to be a villain or a hero? And I immediately begin to establish my role with you. And if you're a cocky villain, I'm going to be cocky right back and tell you I can't wait to snuff your torch. And when I'm looking at your eyes, just know I'm thinking of this moment, the moment I knew you could never win because you can't. And then they go, I can win this game. Now we got a relationship. So when we get on the island, I already have a relationship with you. I'm already rooting against you in your head, not necessarily really in mine, but in the context of the game.
And I said 6 seasons. I meant about the 6th year, because what seemed to happen at that point is you were obviously directing the show on air, and it was almost like watching Ed Harris in The Truman Show. I mean, because, again, by becoming withholding, especially for the people who thought they were the toughest, suddenly that toughness started to sort of crack, and they were desperately trying to get your attention, which I thought was a really interesting gambit on your part.
Well, yeah, now it makes more sense when you say 6 year, because that's about exactly when it was. And yeah, that's what I love about the show, because I do like psychology a lot, and I love human nature, and I love behavior. Why do we do the things we do. In the beginning, people would make these same mistakes on Survivor. And people would ask me, why do you think people keep doing the same thing? And for the first few seasons, I'd scratch my head and say, I don't know. I don't know why they aren't learning. And then it dawned on me, it's our nature. It's not something we can unlearn. If you are a leader, in your DNA, in your cells, I'm a leader, it's only a matter of days until you say, I can't take it anymore. This is where we need to build the shelter. So then people go, oh, that guy's in trouble. He shouldn't have spoken up. He couldn't stop it. It's in his nature. It's the scorpion and the frog or whatever. So now I realize we all behave the way they do, just like I do. I have my own Achilles heel. And when people know what it is, they can light me up so fast.
You'd listen to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is Jeff Probst, filmmaker, star of Survivor, and now author of Stranded. I feel like, though, you actually shown more of yourself in the past couple of years. Because if you travel as much as I do, one thing you can always guarantee is that it's going to be CBS in a hotel room. It's one of my sort of my tethers to the real world is watching Survivor in hotel rooms. And just kind of watching what's happened with you. It's interesting to hear you say boredom, because I thought it was like just another way of playing the players when you became kind of detached.
Well, boredom is the word I would use, because there was a moment where I realized I'm starting to phone it in at Tribal. I'm comfortable enough with the format that I know how to get the answers that we need to get, but I'm not working as hard. And so for me, that was an opportunity. How can I up this for me, and what will it result in? And really, all I did is I stopped asking as many questions.
That's what you stopped talking. And again, just watching how power shifts when you don't say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, because you really were a host in the first 3 or 4 years of the show. And then it's like there was this expectation that you would be the host, and you stopped. And you could see people's eyes start to roll around like marbles after the first few weeks. We didn't know what to make of it anymore, because I think they assumed that it was just the way you were starting. But when you continued it, you could sort of see them start to unwind a little bit.
You know, somebody gave me something to guide as a director, and it was parent, lover, friend. And it was three very simple ways to direct. Figuring out your relationship with the actor. Do you have a parent relationship, a lover relationship, or a friend relationship? And I use all of those on Survivor. But one of the most powerful is the parent one, which is please me. And there are people that I know want to please me. And if I know you want to please me, you will.
But does it shock you when the biggest bullies are the ones who often like basically crumble and want that attention?
Yes, but you can't really tell early on. You need a few days to have the truth of what it's like to have no food. That's the biggest part of Survivor that's hard for the audience to get. Is it's one thing to sleep in the rain. It's another to sleep on bamboo or to sleep next to somebody you don't really like. But the no food, when you think about skipping breakfast, people go, oh man, I'm grumpy by lunch. Now skip lunch. Oh, I'm a nightmare. Now skip dinner. Now do it 3 more days. And by the end, you can't even think straight. And then you got this idiot asking you questions, which are going to screw up your game. So the really good players of Survivor know that their job is to use any question I ask them as a way to move their game forward, not give me the information I want unless it suits them. But I can say this till I'm blue in the face, and most people can't do it because they're either not aware enough, they don't have enough awareness of their position in the tribe, or they're not gifted enough. They just don't have that vocabulary or sensibility to form a sentence that will move the story, that'll get me off their back, but put me onto somebody else. Those are the good players.
Well, in life as on Survivor, self-knowledge is king. My guest is Jeff Probst. He's, of course, the host of Survivor. His first novel is Stranded. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW's Eclectic 24 is our ever-expanding all-music stream featuring the best new releases, classic favorites, and special features, including today's top tune, guest DJ project, and KCRW archives. Listen worldwide anytime online or through your iPhone or Android phone app. KCRW's Eclectic 24, where and when you want it. Check it out at kcrw.com/eclectic24.
Welcome back. It's not Survivor, although you recognize the voice across from me. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is the host of Survivor, and it's one of his exec producers, Jeff Probst. We're also talking about his book, Stranded. As you were talking about food, just think about that section where Buzz is thinking about food the very beginning. I mean, that's a very Survivor moment that you put into the book.
Well, Chris and I, we sold the pitch to Penguin in about 3 minutes. It made such perfect sense. Take kids from a blended family, because there's nothing out there. That's the other part of the book, is there's nothing out there for blended families that's fiction. There's a lot of self-help books, how to tell your kid they have a new brother. I just wanted to write something where they could live it together. And so when Chris and I started writing, one of the reasons I chose him was he was a big Survivor fan. So we had this common language. And then there were a number of survivors, Ceri and Amber, our psychologists, Kathy O'Brien, who was one of the survivors, one of our medical doctors, all got on the phone with Chris. And I said, just let him ask you any question he wants to ask about behavior or feelings or how it works, so that he and I, even though we're long distance, he's in Virginia, can speak the same language. And so Stranded was written to be Survivor for kids, meaning all the things you see on Survivor. After 13 years, that's pretty much how it goes.
But again, that was, as you were talking about the food, just when Buzz almost loses his lunch and he said he's fighting, once you think about food, you can't unthink it.
Yes.
That's basically what you've been saying.
Yeah. And I wish we could do a better job on the show of letting the audience understand that, because that is why people make some of these decisions. They can't think. It's so easy to backseat drive and say, what are you doing? Well, you're not under this stress. So whether it's Survivor or Stranded, if you were on an island and you had food and you had somebody coming by with a cocktail or a soft drink, well, it's a whole different experience. When you're truly stranded, you don't have anything. That was Burnett's thing from the beginning, Elvis, is we always have to remind them, all of your creature comforts are gone. Your pillow is gone. Your shower is gone. Your friend is gone. Your communication to the world and news, gone. You are alone with strangers. Figure it out.
When you were talking about, we were just talking about the last season, the person who's always been the most interesting on the show, and this even gets back to the book, and we can even go to Finders Fear with this, is self-knowledge. I mean, you look back at James Earl Jones' character in that. The person who knows himself best is the person who's going to survive.
Yeah. Jonathan Penner, guy you mentioned who played Survivor, the last time he played, after he got voted out, he told me, he goes, I just figured it out. I'm not a liar, but everyone saw me as a liar, and I should have played like a liar. Bingo. And John Nash, who they based Beautiful Mind movie on, game theory guy, he said, in a zero-sum game in which there's going to be one winner, the way you have to play to have a shot at winning is you have to make your move based on the assumption that every other player is making their best move. Then you make your move. That means I have to have enough awareness to go, now if I'm Elvis, what's his best move? And if I'm the producer in the booth, what should she do? And if she does that and he does that, I've got to go two steps to the left. Now, if they don't make their best moves, you might be dead. But that's the way you have to play the game. And that requires self-awareness.
But again, I wonder if this clearly precedes Survivor in some way, because just looking at how Finder's Fee is built, and again, the person who has the most to say finally is the person who knows himself best. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if that's something that's always been something that's been bouncing around in there for you.
Always. I constantly examine myself. When I met Mark for Survivor, I had a long interview with him, almost 2 hours, and he talked most of it and told me what the show was going to be and that there'll be rats crawling over me and we'll be sleeping in tents. And all I really had time for, I had all these anecdotes I was going to tell him. I used to camp with all this made up stuff, you know, that I was going to try to sell him that I was the guy. But in the end, he left me like 3 minutes. And I tore up I had a picture and resume, and I tore it up and I said, here's what you need to know. I get your show. I've been in therapy. I'm a writer. I'm a student of the human condition. And I thought, that's brilliant. That's everything the show needs in a host. And Mark said, thank you for being honest. Very nice to meet you. And I thought, oh, that's what they tell the guy who doesn't get the job. So even then, 13 years ago, whether it was Finder's Fee or Survivor or anything else I had been working on, I am fascinated by behavior. And that's really what we're talking about, is who are you? What guides you? What are your principles? Joseph Campbell, I may have bastardized this phrase a little bit, but the adventure you're ready for is the one you get, is what guides me. What adventure do you want? I just made a movie, Kiss Me, financed by myself, $900,000.
Well, how'd you end up financing it yourself?
I went to the bank and wrote a check.
Did you just figure that you were going to do that from the outset, or did you try to find outside financing?
I tried for a minute, but the truth is no one wants to make a movie. A $900,000 movie about two teenage girls who are coming of age. And, you know, I found a script that Liz Sarnoff wrote, who was part of the J.J. Abrams camp. She'd written on Lost, been on Deadwood, at Alcatraz. It was this great NC-17 script. I couldn't put it down. It was so provocative. Incredible writing. But it was never going to be seen by anybody because it was too dark. It was Lolita for a 12-year-old girl, and I couldn't do it. But I fell in love with the idea of these two girls, these best friends who were coming of age, and a man, John Corbett plays the guy, and Emily Osment and Sarah Bulger play the girls. This man who was showing these girls they were becoming women because of how he was treating them. He was seeing them as sexual objects. So that relationship drove me to rewrite the script and do it as a more of a PG-13. What is it like to be 13, 14, 15 and have that older guy look at you and you realize, man, I'm different now? No one was going to make that
movie. Sounds a little bit like the Joyce Chopra movie Smooth Talk.
A little bit, yeah. Yes.
That movie couldn't get made today.
No, exactly. But I wanted the adventure. I wanted to make another movie. I wanted to see what I'd learned about storytelling. So I paid for it, and I bought myself an adventure.
But you talk so often, if we look at these two movies now between Kiss Me and Finders, they're both kind of archetypes. And that's something that clearly interests you too, isn't it? Certainly in Finders, I mean, the villain is often shifting too. And it's all about perception in that. It's very much about perception. It's a series of mirrors in that movie.
The one thing I try to hold on to is truth. And so what I wanted to do with Kiss Me is, especially since I was paying for it, is I just wanted to study truth. Jenna Fisher's in it. Rita Wilson's in it. It's a really nice cast. And all we ever talked about, and the only direction I was ever giving them, was trying to find the truth of this moment for them, not playing anything else. And so in that, I got really into what is it like to be 15 and starting to become sexual and have John Corbett, who's not a bad-looking guy, he's incredibly charming, but he's way too old. And what happens from everybody's points of view in their truth? Jenna Fisher's married to John Corbett. What is her truth about this guy who's spending a little too much time with the babysitter? And I'm not scared of that stuff. I love it because it's happening all the time. You know, Jason Reitman makes movies a lot of guys that are on your show that are making movies now that are just, they're truthful. They're not these big tentpole movies that I cannot connect to in any way. They're about real people in real situations. That's what I like. That's why I wanted to try a talk show. I was hoping to be able to break through the clutter and have a real conversation, which is very tough to do in daytime.
Isn't that like basically kind of antithetical to what daytime is nowadays?
It is. I didn't really understand that. But I did take away from the talk show that there's more of that for me because I love, like what we're doing right now, I love the negotiation that happens during a conversation, that I'm going to earn it. Like when we were producing the talk show, some of the producers early on would give me their idea of how we should do the show. And they would say, let's ask about the divorce right away. And I'd say, no, you can't ask about the divorce. You have to earn the right to ask about that divorce. And you earn it by sharing part of your life, letting them know you're safe with me. I'm not going to sabotage you or pull the rug out. I just want to have an honest conversation. And slowly, you probably know in the back of your mind, I'm going to ask you what it's like to be divorced in a public nature because it's fascinating. But you have to earn it. And I think when you earn it, like Howard Stern's very good at earning it in an interview. Some people like him, some don't, but the guy is a great interviewer. And the reason people give him stuff varies. Sometimes he makes you please him. Sometimes he's your best friend. But he earns that, and you never feel he's exploited somebody. You feel like, damn, I learned a lot about Lady Gaga.
Something we talk about here on the show any number of times people come here, the idea of the talk show has disappeared. Mm-hmm. And instead, what people want are these manufactured anecdotes that make people seem like they're friends. And you would basically admit, well, I don't know you, but I want to know you.
We did no pre-interviews, none. And every celebrity that came on said, thank you. And I go, dude, I've done them. It's ridiculous. A producer interviews you for an hour on the phone and then gives your answers to the host who then regurgitates the questions back. Why not just type it up and have somebody read it? We did no pre-interviews, and there was never any idea other than if we're going to have, like, Hugh Jackman was our greatest guest in terms of get. And we just talked about being Hugh, and Les Mis was on. And then we talked about Jean Valjean, the character. And I said, my dad's a lot like my Jean Valjean. And suddenly we were talking about dads, and my dad was in the audience. And Hugh Jackman said, that's an incredible compliment. Your son just paid you the... Now I have Hugh Jackman talking to my dad. We're talking about hero types. I didn't know we were going to talk about that. But there was a negotiation of letting Hugh know that even though we're a tiny little show that nobody's watching, we care and we've done our homework and I'm ready. I'll go wherever you want to go. I just want to talk. And I think there's more of that to be had. And I am so excited that it's turning, that the gatekeepers, the few gatekeepers there are, the few studios, the few networks, the couple of cable networks, it's going to be upturned and we'll be able to reach the world with our content without having somebody censor it or tell us what we should do or shouldn't do, or that's inappropriate, or somebody big is going to say, I'm done with the current distribution system. My brand is big enough. Here's my app. Here's my website. Here's whatever. It's $5 if you're interested. Like Louis C.K. did with his movie. If you want it, come get it. That's beautiful. It doesn't mean the networks and the studios can't still thrive. They can, but you're not the only game.
Is the next iteration of a talk show for you? Because it was obvious that from watching that show that you wanted to really make that contact with the guest. And the subject didn't really matter as long as you made contact. Is the next iteration of that show for you maybe as an app or to do it online or something?
I think so. I really respect these guys that have been doing it. Corolla's been, you know, one that people talk about, but there's a ton of podcasts out there, guys that are
Tell
just,
me about it.
Yeah. And I am the audience. Like I told you, I listen to you every, it comes up the second it's on, and I listen within a day or two at the most, and I'll listen either outside, in my car, if I'm on location, my computer's playing all the time with the podcast. I go to KCRW, I contribute money, I'm paying for that service, and I gladly will. And I think people will. If I used to joke with Mark, if CBS ever stopped wanting to do Survivor, you and I should just split it and go do it and charge our audience a couple of bucks and just put it online. Most people, a lot of people are watching online anyway. We're all afraid of this thing that's happening. Zach Braff talking about Kickstarter. There's nothing wrong with it. It's all good, man. It's all beautiful. People are doing what they want. Give them what they want and they'll pay you a little bit. And if you get rid of all the middlemen, it doesn't have to cost so much. It shouldn't cost $200 million to make a movie. And I know I'm not a movie expert, so maybe I'm talking out of my ass. But it seems like if you look back in the 70s, there were a lot of great movies made, and they didn't cost a gazillion dollars. They were just great stories about interesting people. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm really excited that I get to be a storyteller when things are in such upheaval, because through that upheaval is going to come some brand new, amazing voices.
And we're out of time. And what a great place to end it. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this.
Elvis, you are the king and you need to accept compliments. You are fantastic at what you do.
You're going to wake up my one listener, so stop talking like this. My guest is Jeff Probst. You know him as one of the exec producers and the host of the long-running Survivor. He's been on the air almost as long as I have, so there, I'll take that compliment. His book, of course, is Stranded. He's not only a TV host, he's an industry. Our recording engineer who also mixes the shows, Melissa Morton, is edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. Somewhere, Les Moonves is crying. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.